Today's the last class. So those of you who want to do the little test and get the certificate of end of the however many modules we have, 13 modules. So you can send me an email and I can send you the questions. So those of you who want to write it down, I'll just spell it out for you. It's shankha@gmail.com. So shankha. So, and then you can return them back to me, and they're not hard. And the good news is, in all of this, there's no right, well, there's no, not very many right answers, let's put it that way. Okay. So when we get started, let's just take a few minutes to calm our minds. So we'll just meditate on the breath, and we'll kind of just ease into the Shakyamuni Guru Yoga. So let's take our meditation posture. And we can do the 9-round breathing to clear the energies in our mind stream. Or we can use His Holiness's technique of doing 3 breaths, 3 deep breaths to the bottom of our belly and then out. We can remember that the the Buddhas have shown us the path to to total bliss. Something very opposite from what we have today. And they've laid out the path for us. They've walked the path before us. And the teachings show us exactly what to do and how to get there. And if we examine carefully, we find that there is nothing else that can lead us to the ultimate goal except for realizing the teachings. And so the Buddha, the stainless Buddhas, have shown us the path. So they're the ultimate refuge for us. They will never let us down. They're always willing to help us when we sincerely ask for help. And with unbelievable compassion, they're always considering our welfare. So that's the ultimate source of refuge. So with that, we imagine the Buddha, Shakyamuni Buddha, in front of us, golden in color, the robes of a monk, with a beautiful smile, a compassionate smile, a loving smile on his face. He's sitting cross-legged. His right hand is on his right knee in the earth-touching gesture. And his left hand is on his lap in the mudra of concentration. Sometimes he holds a bowl of nectar too. And he has all the signs of a Buddha. He has long earlobes, Ushnisha, the little lump on the top of his head, and many other signs that we won't go into right now. But most importantly, he's just there smiling at us, accessible when we reach out to him. He's also inseparable from all our teachers, our gurus. And he's surrounded by countless Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. I go for refuge until enlightenment to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. By my training in the six perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all beings. Om, I go for refuge until enlightenment to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. By my training in the six perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all beings. I go for refuge until enlightenment to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. By my training in the six perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all beings. And then we think that we're not the only ones who are in this world who are who have to encounter disappointments, ailments, mental and physical anguish, problems. So all beings around us are like that, humans, animals, and all other beings. So just as we would like to wish the best for ourselves, we would also like the best, wish the best for all of them. So may all beings abide in equanimity, free of attachment and aversion. May all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all beings be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. May all beings find good rebirths and the bliss of liberation. I see a couple of people looking. We don't have enough copies of the prayer, unfortunately, but you can share among people who do, if you wish. There's a couple of people who are single, if you will. So if you wish to share, you can. Okay, so then we'll do the seven limb prayer. To you, O lions, amongst humans, who come in the past, present, and future, in the worlds of the ten directions, I bow down with body, speech, and mind. By my wish for the Bodhisattva's life, many Buddhas appear to my mind, and I bow down to every one of you with bodies equal to the world's atoms. On every atom are countless Buddhas, each emits countless Bodhisattvas. I imagine all phenomena like this completely filled with Buddhas. In celebration to all gone to bliss, with inexhaustible seas of praise, and with sounds of melodious verse, I sing of the Buddha's qualities. Beautiful flowers, precious garlands, sweet music, scented oils and parasols, radiant lights and heavenly incense, I offer to you, victorious ones. Fine clothing and sweet fragrant perfumes, sandalwood powder piled high as Meru, a spectacular array of offerings I offer to you, victorious ones. With deep admiration for all Buddhas and faith in the Bodhisattva's life, with transcendent offerings peerless and vast, I bow down and offer to the victors. Every harmful action I have done with my three doors of body, speech, and mind, besieged by greed, anger, and confusion, all I openly lay bare before you. In my heart I rejoice in virtues of all. and bodhisattvas, solitary realizers, hearers, and in the virtues of all beings. The Lama Zopa Rinpoche, he suggests or he advises that we stop here and we just try to think of all the... It's very important to rejoice, he says. And rejoicing, it's an antidote to jealousy, to envy, to all those things. And but more than that, it's an incredible way of accumulating merit and creating good imprints in our mind stream. So we think about all the good actions of all the people around us. We're all the people, ordinary people. You know, maybe they're Buddhas, we don't know. But all the ordinary people around us who are being kind today, you know, they're working in various, you know, volunteering, they're in soup kitchens or whatever, you know, doctors, nurses, all those people who are doing such great things. So we rejoice that they're, you know, that they're, how wonderful that they can spend their time in such a generous way. And we rejoice, you know, of people who have enough wealth to live comfortably, who don't have maybe some of the problems that we do, who have, you know, happy work and happy workplaces. Maybe we suffer from lack of those kind of things. We rejoice in all the activities of the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas, our teachers. You know, all the time and the effort that they spend to guide us. So, in all those ways, you know, there's so many people all around the world, not Buddhists necessarily, but there's so many people doing so many great things at this very moment. So rejoice in all their efforts and their activities. So yeah, like that. So we have to make it as expansive as we can. Okay, so continuing. You lights of the worlds in 10 directions, who have gained a Buddha's omniscience, all you who are my spiritual guides, please turn the supreme wheel of Dharma. With hands in prayer I earnestly request, you who may actualize nirvana, please stay with us for eons countless, as the number of atoms of the world, for the happiness and the benefit of those wandering in samsara. Whatever slight virtue that I may have created by paying homage, offering and acknowledging my faults, and by rejoicing and praying that Buddhas will always stay and teach us, I dedicate for full awakening. You know, the request to remain and the request to teach, the teachers say are very important. You know, they're especially important. Oh. You want to come this way? You sure? Okay. So the request to teach and the request to remain is very important, and that's because that creates the connection with our teachers, right? So, you know, if you revere His Holiness or Geshe-la or Lama Zopa Rinpoche or whoever your teachers might be, then this creates the imprint to meet them in future lives, for them to continue to guide us. So that's why it's so important to do, you know, those verses, because That makes sure that we will continue to be under their care. And then the offering of the, you know, the mandala offering. This ground adorned with perfume and flowers, Mount Meru, four worlds, sun and moon, imagined and offered as a pure land. May all beings enjoy this pure land. I send this jewel mandala to you, my precious guru. And then we do the heartfelt request. So the next verse is where we do heartfelt requests, which is where we, you know, where we, you know, this is how we gain the blessings of the Buddhas and our teachers, to so that we can make progress on the path, that we can overcome obstacles because they will arise constantly. And so it's important to kind of make these requests to our teachers and to the Buddhas, you know. So glorious and I don't remember if there's a tune to this, but anyway, glorious and precious root guru Shakyamuni, please abide in the lotus and moon seat at my crown. Take care of me with your great kindness and bestow upon me the attainments of your holy body, speech, and mind. So we pray that, you know, that whatever our aspirations are for this life, especially for this life, that we may reach those goals, that we may realize those aspirations, that whatever Lamrim topics and teachings, Geshe-la's teachings, etc., that we go to, and that we understand them, not just understand them, but understand the subtle meaning of them. That we are able to become the compassionate selves that we all want to be. That we can help others in the best way that we can, even though we may not know exactly what the right skillful thing is to do at all times. So like that, may we continue to make progress on the path. When we die with peace and without regret, and that in our next lives we continue to make, that we have a human life, and that we continue to make progress under the guidance of our teachers and the Buddhas. So like that we can make prayers. And then we'll do the mantra 21 times, and as we do the mantra, imagine that Shakyamuni Buddha is in front of us, and white light flows from his heart and enters our heart. Yes?
Tell them the visualizations that they have over you.
Right. And what does this one say? This one doesn't say.
Right.
And it depends on what practice you're doing and what your instructions were. You know, you're right. So I've normally done this as you say, but however you want to make it. I don't think there is any, you know, rule that says it has to be this big or that big. However we can visualize it, each of us is different. You can visualize it as the Buddha above our head, facing in the same direction as us. Or you can visualize the Buddha in front of us, facing us. You know, whichever you're more comfortable with is fine. Right, in front of us, it should be like, right, or not lower than us, but yeah, around eye level, right.
Still in the merit field or alone? Because originally we imagined it.
Right. Such a good question. When at retreats and stuff, when I've done these practices, the merit field at that time isn't there. You know, so we've, I mean, this is a simplified version. The longer practice, you know, dissolve the merit field and all that stuff, and only the Buddha appears, and actually the Buddha and your teacher and the form of the Buddha appears, all that stuff is there. So in this one, Venerable Rana doesn't go into all those details because that can be kind of in the beginning an obstacle to the actual practice. You know, if you make it too complicated, you know, then that's another obstacle, right? So this is basically the essence of the original practice, if you will. So the merit field doesn't have to be there. You know, you can dissolve the merit field into the Buddha and just the Buddha is there.
What's an obstacle for me when it's the thought in my head and how it arcs out of the heart chakra.
So what I do is I've done that too, so it kinda like arcs like this. When the white light, you know, there's white, red, and blue and all that stuff. But I mean, it comes, or you can just imagine that, like, sometimes I've also heard them say that just a shower just comes from straight from his heart into our heart, like that. So, yeah. So first we imagine, so as we do this, as we do the mantra, so first we visualize that white light flows and purifies us of all mental obscuration, spirit harms, obstacles, negative karma, all that stuff. So that's kind of like a purification. And then we visualize golden light that basically bestows on us the realizations of the Buddhas, you know, their realization, so that we can become one with their Dharmakaya, you know, their mind. So like that. Okay. So we'll do this 21 times. Can somebody who knows the tune, because I can never remember the tune, because I know a different tune to this mantra than what we do on Sunday, so I get really confused and I have to do it by myself. Dayatha Om Mune Mune Maha Munaye Soha 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 Dayatha
Mune 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 Mune.
Imagine that the Buddha, if he's in front of you, then he'll come to the top of our head, facing the same direction as us. And he melts into light. Really warm, bright ball of light. And he absorbs, comes and absorbs into us, and our minds and his mind become one, so we really try to feel it. Our minds are clear, limitless. And so we remain here. If you were doing this at home, we would remain here as long as we can with that experience. And when we lose that sense, lose that feeling, we can, if we wish, we can imagine the Buddha again above us and melting or absorbing into our body and mind and bring back that feeling and continue like that. So that's one way of meditating on the Buddha's mind, or the oneness of the Buddha in us as the object of meditation, object of concentration. Okay, so we'll finish by reading the short or the Silamrim overview, basically. The contemplation of the graduated path. Whatever you want for yourself and others with a human form is easily attained. Disengage yourself from meaningless efforts. Strive to accomplish the highest goals. Because all things composite are impermanent, life changes and never abides. That change is the basis of suffering, for the samsaric mind fills with frustration on watching its creations continually fade. The higher you climb in samsara, the higher the cliff on which you perch. The more things you own, the tighter you are bound. The dearer you hold someone, the greater the chance he will hurt you. The faster you subdue enemies, the faster the numbers increase. This body is a thing borrowed for a moment, and possessions are things stored for others. Now we dally with them, and quickly are they lost and misused, and only are sources of misery. Therefore, no worldly possession is worth the effort of gaining. Turning your back on that which only handicaps, an unburdened mind is joy supreme. The pinnacle of aims is to follow this path. Body, speech, and mind kept stainless with pure self-discipline. Mind held in samadhi, blissful and clear, and wisdom seeing all realities of every situation. The mother beings wandering in the six realms, to me their child, are pieces of my heart. For many times have they soothed my troubles, and in infinite ways have they brought me joy. These infinite beings, so kind, are covered by the fog of ignorance, constantly lashed by whips of delusions. They have no chance to lay down the burden of misery from their minds. Therefore, whenever you meet anyone, greet them with eyes smiling with love. Why mention you should not even consider holding evil intentions or deceptive thoughts? The way people and things seem to be, other than projected labels is a distortion created by deluded mind. If we look at the root of things, emptiness is clearly understood. And in the vast space of perception of emptiness, mental grasping for ultimate subsides. Then one looks into the face of the world. Everything is seen without essence. Understanding interdependence, we understand emptiness. Understanding emptiness, we understand interdependence. This is the view which is the middle and which is beyond the terrifying cliffs of eternalism, nihilism, neither or both. So the reason, you will notice that all the pujas, you know, they have a lamrim, you know, like a review somewhere in there. And there's a very reason for it. It's because, you know, and the reason why it is in this practice is because we're trying to create imprints in our mind to realize these great realizations, right? And they know, we know and the teachers know that we're not going to realize it most likely, all of these things in this lifetime, but we want to create these imprints as much as we can, right? So, so that we have wherever we are in our next life and our following lives, that if we have these imprints, we will come back to these things, right? So we will continue to live virtuous lives and continually make progress. So that's why. And also, the other reason also is, you know, they say that Lama Tsongkhapa's teachings, you know, which is the Lamrim, which is what this is, right, is extremely rare to find. I mean, we're very fortunate that we are at a time when Lama Tsongkhapa's teachings are available. And so we want to take advantage of it while we can. You know, the fact that we have access to these things is pretty amazing. And so we want to create these, you know, these habits, you know. That's why they memorize all these things so much. And, you know, so it's just in our, you know, it's in our minds. Okay, so we'll do the dedication. By the merit of this virtue, may I become Buddha and lead all beings, everyone, into that enlightened state. May the precious Bodhi mind, not yet born, arise and grow, and may that born not decline, but increase more and more. There you go. So that was. So it's a very profound practice, actually. You know, it's really simple to do. But as one does it more and more, like, you know, practices like this, this practice and other practices like this, you know, it's, you know, all the teachings of the Buddha, you know, all 84,000 baskets of teachings, they say he taught for. He died when he was 80. He started teaching when he was 30, close to 30. So that's 50 years of teachings, right? So that's a lot of teachings. So they, you know, so they say that all of those teachings basically, in some form or fashion, are pretty much in here. You know, so when we do one of these practices, we are actually studying or reminding ourselves of all of the Buddha's, everything that he said. Right, in the most subtlest of meanings that he's, you know, of his words, you know. So they're very profound, and one, as you know, in the beginning, it's a little inscrutable, maybe, you know. There's some words that we may not understand: emptiness, interdependence, and, you know, eternalism, neither or both, all that stuff. But, you know, don't let that become an obstacle, right? Because you'll find that if you stay with it, you gain a certain amount of understanding that comes with the practice. And also because as you go to Geshe-la's teachings and other teachings and so forth and so on, they become clear. You know, they become clear. I mean, when I first started many years ago doing this, it didn't make much sense to me. But, you know, if you keep doing it, it's amazing. It does make a big, big difference. You know, You know, because if we just meditating, you know, people have, or rather, there are times in my life where all I did was, you know, get up in the morning and I just did, let's say, concentration, you know, breathing meditation, or, you know, or read or something like that, right? And, you know, I realized relatively quickly that the practice became rather dry. And, you know, I asked, I don't know who I asked. I asked Rinpoche, maybe. Maybe I asked Venerable Rene, I don't know. And I said, you know, so what do I do? And he said, and I think both of them said, are you doing a guru yoga practice? I said, well, no, not really. I was, but I stopped. And they said, well, you need to do it. Well, this is a guru yoga practice, right? And the reason they said that is because this practice with it brings great blessings, you know? I mean, it's a kind of a vague term, which, I don't know, in our modern rational world may not make sense. But somehow it seems to work, you know? I don't know how it works, but it seems to work. And one finds that, you know, we find new ways of seeing the same old things, you know? Things that we never thought about, kind of, or rather things that we kind of go, we see things deeper. Maybe that's the way, things that we didn't see before, suddenly they appear to us. You know, even though it's the same book that you read every day, you know, but then you somehow get something out of it, you know. Actually, there's a story about Lama Tsongkhapa. You know, he was trying for many years to understand the subtlest meanings of the Prajnaparamita. So that's the Perfection of Wisdom Sutra. And he was trying to, you know, put it all together. There were parts that, you know, seemed to contradict each other and all that stuff. And so he asked Maitreya, what should I do? You know, we don't have the luxury of speaking directly to Maitreya, but he did. And Maitreya said, you know, you should go up to Wuling, I can't remember the name. There's a mountain in Tibet. Anyway, and do, you know, these prostrations and these prayers, you know, and that's what he did. You know, he did 10 million prostrations, 1 million prostrations. Anyway, a lot of prostrations. He went with 6 of his students, I think. Anyway, so he did a lot of prostrations and a lot of prayers. And that's Lama Tsongkhapa, who basically, you know, by that point, I mean, you know, there's 10 levels of a bodhisattvas, right, before you become a Buddha. I mean, he must have been at the 8th level already. I mean, I can only imagine. In any case, so there he is, you know, doing prostrations and his prayers. And after he'd finally finished it, he said, I read the same page and I saw something totally different. You know? So, and I've talked to other practitioners and other monks and nuns who have said the same thing, you know. I mean, one of the first, if you become, you know, when you do the 6, you know, the 6 preparatory practices that we have, you know, the preparatory practices. So the preparatory practices, if you've devoted your life to practicing to the Dharma, you know, let's say if you're a monk or a nun, or even if a lay person have decided to basically make it your life, then Rinpoche, what he will do is he will ask you to do a 3-month retreat on just water bowls, for example, or just on prostrations, you know, just 35 Buddhas. That's it. All you're doing every day, 10, 20 times a day, is just doing 35 Buddha prostrate, you know. And so what happens is, at the end of it, something shifts, you know. And, you know, people call it blessings, other people call it other things, whatever it is. But something changes, you know. And that's the power of this practice as well. And that's why all the Tibetan traditions, all the Indian Buddhist traditions as well, you know, they, you know, that's what this, you know, and Nagarjuna did this, and all the great masters have been doing it. So, you know, I think that it has a lot of power. just from that point, you know. And especially this one, I really like this one, because these verses are taken from the King of Prayers. I mean, you know, if you can imagine, I don't know, those of you who know the King of Prayers, it's an amazing, amazing piece of, well, literature, certainly, but just amazing, just inspiring prayer. And these verses are from the King of Prayers. And if you think about it, you know, the King of Prayers, this is Gandhava Huda Sutra, so that was like in the first few hundred centuries A.D. And so they've, you know, all the great masters, you know, you think about Atisha, you think about Padmasambhava, who was the first teacher who went to Tibet in the 700s, you know, you think about, you know, Nagarjuna, you think about Chandrakirti, all these guys you hear about, you know, they were doing the King of Prayer. They were doing these exact same verses that we're doing here. So it has a lot of power just from that aspect. And it's just, you know, just beautiful language, I find. Anyway, and, you know, as you progress on the path and as you learn more and as you study more and you find that, you know, you're doing this meditation or that, or this meditation or that meditation, you find that if you make this your kind of like your anchor, if you will, in your framework, you can easily just put things inside, you know. You'll know, you know, you can just say, oh, okay, at this point, you know, you know, I'll do my concentration practice. Or at this point, I will do, you know, I'm doing this Lam Rim topic. I'll do this, you know. All that stuff fits in here, you know. And then as you do more and more, you have a certain, you kind of have an inner guidance, if you will, where you know that some days, you know, maybe the confession part of it appeals to you. So you kind of stop there and you kind of just take extra time, you know, and you can maybe speed over the other stuff. And the other days, you know, something else will appeal to you, you know, like that. You know, it's kind of a growing, it has its own life in a way, you know. So that's kind of how this practice is supposed to be. You know, otherwise it would be, if you were doing the same thing over and over every day and just, you know, it becomes rote, right? Boring, really. So, yeah, okay. So I hope that helps. So today is the last day. And so I asked Geshe Wangmo to talk about how to meditate on the Lam Rim. I don't know how much he did. How to meditate on the Lam Rim, overcoming obstacles. Did she talk about that? She did? Okay. Oh, I see. So she actually gave an overview of the Lam Rim. Oh, I see. Okay. Okay.
And how to incorporate that into
daily. Oh, very good. Okay, good. All right. So then what I wanted to talk about today was, well, what to do in between sessions, what they talk, you know, in the Lam Rim they say, what to do in between sessions, which for us is essentially the whole day. You know, I mean, if you were making a retreat, if you were doing a Lam Rim retreat, you would do four sessions a day, you know, so that's once before dawn, then you have breakfast, then after that you do another session, then you have lunch, then you, after that you have another session, then you have dinner, and after that you have another session, and then you go to bed, right? So that's how it works, the four sessions a day. So your sessions last, I don't know, a couple of hours, let's say. And then you take a break for half an hour, and then you eat or whatever, you know. And then, so your in-between sessions are basically the kind of like times you have to do something, like eat or, you know, sleep or go to the bathroom or, you know, or stuff like that, you know, or just stretch your legs, that kind of thing. So that's what they mean, what to do in-between sessions. But for us, in-between sessions means, if we're practice, you know, if we're doing a practice in the morning and we have a little short practice at night, then basically it's, you know, 12, 14 hours of what to do in between, right? So so the important thing is that, you know, if we have our practice in the morning, okay, so I'll review kind of what Rinpoche says, how we should structure our day. I think I talked about it a little bit on the first day, but I'll kind of, since today's a summary, if you will, so I'll just... So basically, the idea is to make the Dharma practice an integral part of our life. So we live our life in the Dharma, right? So, I assume, by the way, that you're not, you know, I mean, we're not engaging in the 10 non-virtuous actions and all that stuff, right? So that's the basic foundation, right? So we're not killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, for 3 of body, you know, 4 of speech, which is lying, divisive speech, harsh speech, idle chatter, right, gossip, and then the 3 of mind, which is wrong view, doubt, wrong views, and jealousy, envy, whatever that one's called, malice, right? So those 3 of mind. So those are the 10 non-virtuous actions. So I'm assuming that those of us in this room are probably not engaging in those non-virtuous actions. So once we have that basic framework, because ethical behavior is the basic framework for all of Buddhism, right? So once we have that, what do we do with our day, right? So Rinpoche suggests that, you know, the most important thing for us to find meaning in our lives, right, is to really understand and realize, get a really experiential realization of how precious our human, this life is, right? That's we must have, right? That's the basic thing that we have to have some understanding of, right? And that's why Geshe-la spends so much time, if you notice, every Sunday and every Wednesday when he teaches on precious human life and meaning of life and so forth and so on, right? And so Rinpoche says that, you know, you wake up in the morning, you say, oh, how wonderful that I have another day. I didn't die overnight. Could have happened, right? 3 people die every second in this world, right? So 8 hours, that's a lot of people who have died. I could have been one of them, but I wasn't. So I have another day, which is pretty amazing. So he says, you know, think about how wonderful it is to have another day, and that may I spend this day in the best possible way, right? Only thinking about benefiting myself and benefiting others, right? So that's the motivation that we have to, you know, we're in bed and we open our eyes, you look up at the ceiling and you say, oh, you know, that's the first thing that kind of goes through one's head, right? So that kind of sets the motivation for the whole day. Whatever we do, may be kind of suffused with that feeling, right? And so then, you know, we do our practice, you know, we do our practice, you know, so forth and so on. But when we do our practice, that doesn't mean that we get up on the cushion and we start, you know, shouting at our kids, shouting at our wife, you know, our husband, you know. And, you know, we have to, you know, because it's easy to do, right? I mean, you know, you get up from the cushion and you're suddenly sucked into you check your emails and you check your phone messages and all that stuff. And it starts quickly, right? By the way, I suggest that before you do practice, that you don't check your mail or check your phone messages or get on Facebook or, I don't know, whatever one does, right? So in any case, whenever we are in the world, we have to kind of somehow keep in our back of our mind what we are doing. What are we living for? What is our goal, right? Our goal is to, in the Buddhist path, our goal is to be of ultimate benefit, right? Not just to ourselves, but to others. But we have to be, you know, we also have to make sure that we take care of ourselves, right? Because as I think Geshe-la says this, but I think some... anyway, Geshe-la certainly said, you know, if you can't help yourself, you can't help others. Right? First, we have to be able to help ourselves. So during the day, so when we eat, for example, you know, we do a food offering prayer, right? In however way you feel is, you know, is meaningful for you, right? So a simple way to do it would be, you know, this food, you know, I'm eating it not just for myself, you know. In the prayer, actually, it says not to be a glutton, not to be this and that. But I don't think we're gluttons anymore in this world, in the Western world. I don't think, but But, or maybe we are. I don't know. I don't. What does glutton mean? Glutton? Is that all that glutton means?
Overindulgence.
Okay. The prayer says, you know, that I'm, so I may I take this food not to be a glutton, but rather only to nourish myself so that I can be of benefit, you know, for other beings, you know, so that I, you know, so that kind of thing. And you know, to and so offer, you know, and we offer it to the Buddhas and, you know, our teachers and so forth and so on. So like that, you know, every action that we take has some, you know, we remind ourselves about the Dharma, right? So Lama Zopa Rinpoche, for example, says when you're washing the dishes, you think, you know, as I'm washing the dishes, I'm washing away my mental afflictions and my negative imprints in my mind, and may it also remove all the obscuration and negative imprints of all the beings in this world and so forth and so on, right? Like that. And so that's kind of, you know, so eating, washing the dishes, you know, when we're vacuuming, you're cleaning the dirt off, you know, there's a famous story about Chudapandaka, you know, the big main road and small road. Remember that? I don't know. Anyway, it's okay. So anyway, so the Buddha actually, there was a guy in the Buddha's time. All his job was to sweep, you know, and that's what he said, you know. As I sweep, I'm wiping away the dirt and wiping away the stains and so forth and so on, right? So like that. So we can remind ourselves that every action that we make during our day, all these mundane actions, you can remind ourselves about the Dharma. Some people actually, Venerable Amy Miller actually did one, you know, I don't know, some of you may know her. She's a director at Milarepa Center in Vermont. And I've known her for many, many years, from the late 90s, I guess, maybe. And she actually, before she became a nun, she was in Washington. She had a high-stress job in Washington as a lobbyist, I think. That's what it was, as a lobbyist. And so people were calling her always, right? And so she was, you know, and so what she would do, she had this, and back then you didn't, well, I don't know. So she had, and so she had this, she knew these calls were going to get her upset or, you know, get her blood racing and all that stuff, right? So what she would do is she would wait till the fourth ring or the fifth ring to pick up the phone. And in between, she would start doing her mantras, you know, to calm her mind before, you know, or whatever she was concentrating on that day, you know, like maybe she was thinking about a particular topic, you know, she would kind of remind herself. So there are cues like that that one can set up. You know, I know people who have like reminders on their computer that pop up, you know, once every couple of hours or whatever, you know, it just says check up and see what's going through your mind, you know, things like that. So there's interesting things that one, I think there's an app too now, somebody told me. So things like that to kind of remind ourselves that, you know, we're in between a session, right? In between our previous session this morning and the next session, either tonight or tomorrow morning, right? So like that. So, and when we're walking, for example, it's really cool. Lama Zopa Rinpoche says, when we're walking, you imagine that all the beings are behind us. So we're leading all the beings towards enlightenment. And all the holy objects and stupas and the holy books, you know, holy teachings. The teachings, the stupas, the holy objects, all that stuff is on our right. That way you're kind of circumambulating at all times. You know, so you're kind of like that. So you're accumulating merit as well as, you know, bringing other, you know, all the beings to, you know, you're bringing all the beings with you to enlightenment, right? So like that, right? So there are all these things that one can do. And there's actually, Lama Zopa has there's a book called How to Make Life Meaningful. There's a little 30, 40-page book that Venerable Sarah put together of Lama Zopa's teachings on it, actually. And so it says, you know, what you can do. You know, you're walking upstairs and down the stairs, and you can think about, you know, as you open the door. Actually, I wanted to read this to you. I found this. A couple of nights ago, I was reading this book, and there is a, this was written in the 7th century by Rahula Bhadra, who was an Indian master, And he, they say he was a teacher of Nagarjuna. I'm not sure. There were, anyway, that's, it's another story. So, so this is what he was saying in the 7th century. So he says, on every occasion, pray tirelessly for the benefit of beings. When you're going to sleep, think, may all beings attain the absolute nature. When you wake up in the morning, may they awaken as Buddhas. When you get up, may they have the body of a Buddha. When you dress, may they be clad with the ability to be ashamed to do wrong and show restraint before others. When you start a fire, may they burn the firewood of negative emotions. When you eat, may they eat the food of concentration. When you open a door, may they have access to the city of deliverance. When you close a door, may they close the way to lower rebirths. When you go out, may I take the path of deliverance for all beings. When you go somewhere, may I lead all beings in the higher worlds. When you arrive, may I liberate the beings of the lower worlds. When you see someone happy, may all beings find the happiness of Buddhahood. When you witness the suffering of others, may all beings be free from suffering. So, it's really nice. So like that, you know, so that's how we kind of have to think, you know, and we train ourselves, you know, our minds just become, as Lama Zopa Rinpoche says, you know, our minds become just, we're just constantly thinking about benefiting others. You know, we may not be able to benefit others. I mean, that there's, you know, we're not high bodhisattvas or we're not Buddhas. We don't have the skillful means, you know, we don't know what is the right thing to do at times, you know, many times, most of the time, we don't know what the right thing to do is to be of most benefit, right? But the idea is that we have to make our minds be like that, right? Because if we are able to, because we're working towards that goal, right? Right now, we are babies on the path. So we think like babies. We create the imprints in our minds to just keep going, right? At some point, we will develop, you know, the courage, the wisdom, the strength, the fortitude, the, you know, the means, all that stuff will have come, right? And then we will be of great benefit, right? But if we don't set us up for that, we will never get there, right? So that's kind of, Venerable Rubina had an example, which is like, if you think about a doctor, you know, who wants to, you know, help others, right? You know, she was telling the story of this guy who went to Nepal and he saw all these kids who were blind or had cleft palates and things like that, and he wanted to help him, but he couldn't, you know, he couldn't do anything about it, right? So he went to medical school, you know, but you know, you have to go to four years of undergraduate degree, then you have to go 4 years of medical school, then you have to do what, 3 years or 2 years of residency, and then you might get a, you know, little diploma or certificate thing that tells you. So you've got 10 some years of hard work, right? So that's, but I mean, you know, the first day you go to class, what are you doing? You're just sitting there doing the most rote things. You're wondering, what does this have to do anything with what I'm going to want, what I want to do, right? But you have to continue to make that effort, right? Every day you go to class, you spend time, you make a really big effort. And someday you are going to be able to go to Nepal and help those kids, right? Like that. So that's kind of like what we are, right? You know, we're on that long journey. And so we have to, if we keep the Dharma in our minds, like Rahula Bhadra says, then we will get there, you know? And maybe not in this lifetime. But again, if we create the imprints in our minds, then we will make it in some lifetime. And probably not very long from now. You know, because we just have to make sure we continue to make effort to, so that we have human lives, you know, continually, and that we meet our teachers continually. If we can do those two things, you know, then we make really fast progress. Okay, so, and then, so in the morning we do our practice, you know, accumulate merit and so forth and so on, the blessings of the Buddhas. We spend our day as best as we can, and if there is if we mess up, as we will, because we are all human, we try to catch ourselves as quickly as we can, right? And we try to purify it if we can, then and there, right? And purification is easy because, there's a Vajrasattva practice, you know, Buddha Vajrasattva. And Lama Zepa Rinpoche even has a little pocket size. You can actually put it in your pocket, a little pocket size book, you know. And you can just, like, open it up and just, you know, it takes maybe 5 minutes. And you can do a purification practice like that. And then at night, Rinpoche suggests that before we go to bed, we do a purification practice, you know, Vajrasattva practice, where we think through our day and we think about all the things that we did and we rejoice in all the good things that we did, you know, because we do good things in the day. Buddhism is not all about bad karma. And we do lots of good things, and we should rejoice in all those good things that we did, you know? I mean, we truly rejoice in our own actions, right? And then we think also about the things that we may have done better, and we purify those, right, through the Vajrasattva practice. And the wonderful thing about the Vajrasattva purification is that it helps one let go of things that otherwise we tend to kind of ruminate on and feel guilty about and continually beat ourselves over with. So there's a gentleness that the practice brings with it, you know, so we're kinder to ourselves, which is important because we can't be kind to others if we can't be kind to ourselves. The other thing, as you'll find in the next class is Samsara and Nirvana. And there you'll find, karma. You guys have already done karma, right? So you know that, you know, karma, what are the four karma? Karma is definite. Karma grows, right? And then there's somebody else. You can't have somebody else's karma. And then also, if you haven't done something, you're not going to have a result of the karma, right? So those are the four main karma topics. And the second one, which is that karma grows. Karma is definite and karma grows. So that's why it's important to do the purification practice then and there, because if we forget, if we don't do the purification, just like a seed grows into this big tree, positive karma, any positive karma, tiny positive karma, will grow into a big tree over time, many lives. But negative karma, unfortunately, also does the same thing, right? So if we purify, then that stops the karma from growing, right? We may still, the result of the karma may still ripen at some point in the future, but at least it won't get bigger because, you know, there's stories about you do something tiny and then it ends up, you know, being, you know, you have this horrendous life because you didn't, purify something. So that's the idea, is that we kind of cut it at the root, right, if we purify. So the Vajrasattva practice, you know, you do the, it takes maybe, if you do the Vajrasattva practice, you know, it takes maybe 15 minutes, 18 minutes, something like that. There's 21, you do 21 of the long 108 syllable mantra, you know. So that's seven of body, seven of speech, seven of mind. So that's how the 21 comes about. And if that's too much, then Vigeshala suggests that you just do the short Vajrasattva mantra, Om Vajrasattva Ahom. That's short. And you do that, how many times? At least 21 times, but I don't know if it says 108 or not. I'll have to ask him, or maybe you can ask him if you want to know. So you do the short mantras, and that basically stops the karma from growing. It doesn't totally purify it like the other one does. You know, like if you do the full Vajrasattva, the karma is purified. But if you do what Geshe-la was saying, where you just do the short Vajrasattva mantra, and that's all you can do, then that at least stops it from growing. And I have to admit that I have done that at times when I've been lazy. I just kind of lie in bed and I just do the short mantra just so that I can stop it from growing, you know. Then I'll do the Vajrasattva the next morning to kind of make up for it, you know, so that I'll do that. But in any case. And then Rinpoche suggests that when we go to sleep, we've done the Vajrasattva practice and we've purified whatever has been we've created. And so when we go to sleep, we can go to sleep basically thinking that just like in the morning when I woke up, it was a wonderful brand new day. Tonight when I go to sleep, it might be the last time I go to sleep. So I have taken care of everything. You know, there are no regrets. You know, I've done the best I can. Or even if I've made mistakes in my life, I've tried to make amends as best as I can. Right? And so just go to sleep like that, right? And various teachers have suggested that as you go to sleep, you can sleep with an image of whoever you find, you know, like a holy being, like Shakyamuni Buddha or Tara or, Manjushri, or your teacher, for example. So you visualize them in front of you, right? Just like we did with this practice, you know, the Shakyamuni Buddha in front of us. So as you go to sleep, you kind of have that image so that two reasons. One is if it is our last time that we breathe, then last time that we go to sleep, that imprint in our mind, right, as, you know, we're going to sleep, right? And, you know, it's very important at the time of death, you know, the state of the mind, that's why in Buddhism they always are talking about death and so forth and so on, right? At the time of death, the state of our mind is probably a very big determining factor in deciding what the next life is going to be, right? So if we're dying, if we're at the time of death, if we're governed by fear and anguish, next type of life we're going to have is probably going to be, you know, not that great. You know, whether it's human or not, it's material, it's not going to be probably not that great. However, if our mind is at peace and calm and happy, then we will have a life that is, again, is where we can continue to make progress, right? Like that. So that's why they say that, you know, having the Buddha's image or the teacher's image or whatever, you know, a holy being's image in our mind and to create that imprint is important, right? The other reason they say that is that even if we die, let's say, I don't know, we have a heart attack and we die, if we know we're about to die, however that happens, right? We know, you know, we have some time, let's say, you know, an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, whatever it is. That what happens is at those times, our minds are already very disturbed, right? Because we know that maybe the end is coming. So at that time, it's very difficult to think about the Dharma and, you know, remember the mantras, remember the teachings, remember all that stuff. It's very, very difficult, right? But if we have made a practice of remembering the image, right, we can, if that image is ingrained in our minds, we can bring that image to our mind quickly and immediately. So that, because sometimes that's all that one can do. In fact, you know, I heard this story from Venerable Rene, actually. He was talking about Rigpa Rinpoche, who was a great master. He died in the, must have been in the mid-90s, yeah, mid to late 90s. And he died of, you know, it was a really quite excruciating death. And so Venerable Brahma asked him, Rinpoche, what are you thinking? What practices are you doing as you're coming near death? And he said, he's a really high being, right? Rupa Rinpoche, who was one of Lama Zopa's teachers. He said, it's so difficult. I can't remember anything, he said. But I just remember the Buddha. I just have the Buddha's picture in my mind. That's all I can do right now. I just do my money mantras and I just have the Buddha's picture in my mind. You know, and while, you know, they're pumping all this stuff in him and all these things, right? So I figured that if Rupa Rinpoche could do that and it was benefit for him, you know, certainly for me, I can, you know, might do me some good too. So that's something that the teachers also mention, is to do that when we go to sleep, is to have the holy being, someone we feel close to. And I think that, you know, and I think it also is true that even if we're not necessarily Buddhists and we don't, you know, we feel a connection with, let's say, some saint or in the Christian tradition or the Hindu tradition or something like that, that works too. A holy being, I think that's the most important thing. You know, someone who really we feel connection to, you know, and doesn't have to be Buddhist, you know, it's not like that. So, okay. Then, finally, talked about purifying you. Okay, so we talked about activities to bring success, accumulating merit, purifying, and doing guru yoga practices with heartfelt requests, right? So those are the three main things. Obstacles that one faces, right? Which one is most the time one faces laziness, right? I'll do it tomorrow, or I'll sleep a little bit later because I don't know, I feel like sleeping a little bit later. Or I'll do this practice, but I'll try to do it as quickly as I can, make do the short version as quickly as I can, that kind of thing. So the antidote to that, they say, is, or the reason that one is lazy is because one hasn't realized precious human rebirth, precious human life. Okay? So anytime you tell a Tibetan master, you say, oh, gee, I don't want to do this, they will say, go meditate on precious human life. Because if you have gained an understanding of how precious this life is, then one doesn't want to waste any time. You know, every moment is important, you know. So, which is true, if you think about it, you know, I actually did a calculation once. You know, I do all these calculations, like 3 seconds, every person is dying, you know, I kind of do these things, you know. So I did this calculation once that, you know, if you sleep 8 hours a day and you're working 8 hours, which is optimistic probably, you know, I work maybe 10 hours a day. So, you know, so that's 18 hours right there. No, that can't be right. Is that right? Yeah, 18 hours right there. So you have 6 hours left, right, really, during the day, 6 hours left. To meditate, to eat, to drink coffee, to go to the bathroom, to take a walk, to talk to your wife, play with your kids. That's it, right? 6 hours. So, and you know, it's, and so if you, even if you practice an hour a day, which is difficult for most people, I think. So even if you practice an hour a day, it's, you know, it takes, if you wanted the equivalent of like a year's worth of, like if you did a year retreat, right? You have to, it's like 30 years of hour a day or 40 years of hour a day, I can't remember now, to make up that year, right? You know, it's a tiny, you know, you really have very little time. We all really have very little time, you know, if you think about it. So that's why they say that it's important that, you know, if we have just the extra 10 minutes today, not to make it, you know, spend the 10 minutes and do it correctly and do it well, rather than just taking the shortcut and so forth and so on, you know. And the other thing is doubt, right? That's the other main obstacle that people face. which is, oh, does this really, you know, it's like, you know, am I, you know, do I, you know, we have so little self-confidence, you know, and we have, we're always questioning whether this is going to lead anywhere, you know, does this, you know, I don't see any benefit. You know, I don't see the Buddhas anyway. Well, how am I going to get the blessings? You know, I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me. All that stuff, right? Or enlightenment seems so far away. You know, it's just, you know, those Buddhas are up there, and I'm like way down here. I mean, all that stuff comes up, right? And so the antidote to that is to meditate on refuge. To really try to look at that topic of refuge and to really try to understand, you know, what it means to take refuge and why, you know, why the Buddhas are the ultimate source of refuge. And because when you do that, it kind of generates this educated faith. I don't want to just say faith. Faith, because faith is shallow. Faith can be overcome, you know. One can be persuaded out of faith, you know. It's educated faith, I guess. Or there's other terms they use. There's three types of faith. But anyway, I won't go there. But educated faith, where one is really has a grounding, you know. It's based on knowledge and wisdom, right? And so that's why the refuge is so important. So if we're feeling doubt, then go and look at the chapter on refuge and try to kind of generate that faith again, you know, because that's the most important thing. And what have I missed anything? Oh, and they also say to, if you are committed to the Dharma path, then to associate with like-minded people. In other words, you know, if you're trying to practice Dharma, but all your friends are, you know, interested in partying all night, or I don't know, I don't have many friends, so I can't say what they do. But I'm not joking. I really don't have many friends. No, it's okay. But you know, it's like that. You know, I mean, if they're always cursing or they're one thing that you shouldn't do is harsh speech. And if you're around people who are always engaging in harsh speech, it's difficult, right? Or people. I guess so. I don't know. Yeah. And then, you know, or for example, people who are very interested in material wealth. Right? And so if all your friends are grasping at, you know, big houses and big cars and big whatever else, it's hard to not get sucked in to needing to have a big house and a big car and all that stuff, right? So like that, you know, if we're trying to, you know, practice renunciation, which is giving up this attachment to all these things, right? To be happy, content with what we have, then all our friends are basically always looking for the next greatest thing, then it's going to be difficult to do that, right? So that's one thing to remember, is to associate with like-minded people. There was one other thing that they mention. And also to watch our behavior even when we're by ourselves, you know, because lots of things go through our minds, right? You know, they say, Geshe-la says that, you know, we are very careful about, you know, if we have a bruise or something, we're very careful about making sure people don't hit us or whatever. So we're very careful about protecting our body. You know, especially we have the, what is that? The zone of private, what is it called? Personal space. You know, we have this personal idea of personal space where the people can't come within this shield that we built, you know. But he says, Geshe-la says, that we'll let anything enter our minds, right? We have no protection, right? We will let anything enter our minds. We never stop anything, right? So like that, we have to be careful about, we'll always have to see what's going on in our mind. And one of the things where we can, this has an effect, or this can affect, is, you know, what kind of shows we watch, what kind of television or movies we watch, things like that, right? So those have a big impact as well, you know. And sometimes, you know, documentaries that, you know, maybe, you know, let's say you don't agree with the politics that's going on now or whatever it is, and, you know, and you watch, you know, I don't know, channels that stir that stuff up, right? Then you're going to react to it like that, right? And that's not to say not to engage in, be engaged. It's not to say not to be engaged, but we have to have some amount of separation, right? Some amount of space. Because it does no good if we are all basically just screaming at the loudest, right? Kind of like that. So like that, we have to kind of watch what also enters our minds, right? So this is kind of like, you know, kind of looking at life through lamrim colored glasses, you know, to kind of like always have the lamrim behind us in our heads and just to see how we're... So that's all part of our daily practice, right? So that's why I was saying this is all the in-between cushion, in-between sessions stuff, that, right? That, yeah. Hmm.
If you have friends, let's say, who are into material things, I had thought about this and thought that, you know, being the one or one of the ones that isn't affected as much by that might help them by just example.
Mm-hmm.
And get something and then it wears out,
mm-hmm.
you know, for them. So maybe they would think back on. I mean, I don't know that it means to avoid them entirely.
No, I'm not saying that. I mean, you have to use your own. I'm not saying that you have to cut yourself off from all friends who are, you know, I think that. That'd be very difficult in today's world, I think. You know, everybody, I mean, I myself, I'm, you know, we are all, to some degree, we are all into material things, right? I mean, it's difficult to not be into material things and live in this world. But we have to kind of be, just see what, you know, see what it is. And if we have to be at least aware that when we are getting involved, we are the ones who are getting, you know, becoming more materially, you know, grasping because of our friends, right? And that's when we have to really judge, right? We have to kind of see, is this true Dharma practice, you know? And that's when we have to make a decision, you know? And sometimes it's difficult, you know? I mean, you know, when I took my lay vows many, many years ago, one of the things I had to stop was any intoxicants. That was one of them, right? Intoxicants includes alcohol, right? Which meant that there were some people that I used to hang out with who liked to drink. Not drink to excess, necessarily, but just like to drink, go to bars and drink. Well, you know, it wasn't something that I did anymore. You know, and that wasn't that I wasn't a friend, their friend, but it just, you know, it wasn't something that really was part of my practice, you know? And so you kind of have to make a, you know, I'm still friends with them, but I just don't do those things with them, you know, like that. So you just kind of have to make, you know, make some choices sometimes.
It might also depend on your, like,
yeah. Right.
If I know that I'm easily sucked into that, and I'm trying to distance myself from that, it's good to distance myself from people who can suck me
up. Right, yeah. Yeah.
I was trying to clarify, that doesn't mean if somebody's doing something, it isn't quite...
No. I mean, you have a lot of... It's up to you at the end of the day. You know, you're the best person to make that decision.
Because Venerable Rabina would talk about how Lama Zopa likes Rambo. Remember?
Yeah, you know, it's...
That man loves his country.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, so Right, like that, you know. And And I think that's pretty much it. Okay. It's not at all. So let's end with a dedication. So whatever merit we have gained by coming to these sessions and thinking and discussing and doing this Shakyamuni Buddha practice and all the other meditations, may it be of benefit not just to us, but to all those around us. Whatever merits I've created may be of benefit to everyone and may not bring any harm to anyone. Whatever problem or joy that I might have become only helpful for others and cause them all to become Buddhas. Thank you very much.